Poop Talk Tuesday. Want to talk about poop? I can talk about poop. Got a shit story. Poop Talk Tuesday, 7 o'clock. And then everybody else started. They told four or five more. And then we had the discussion about, because some people are all on board for it and some people are not. They think it's just
some people are horrified.
Yeah, they think it's just the worst thing in the world. But
I personally enjoyed it.
I know 700 of them.
Oh yeah,
sadly.
Shit stories.
Yes.
I write a shit story every day.
Hey, buddy, it's Tall But True. I'm Ben Bailey here with my co-host DC Betty.
Hey, everybody.
And a return guest, our first ever return guest, one of our brethren in the storytelling show of old that this show is loosely based on.
Yes.
It's Mr. Vic Henley. Welcome back,
Vic
buddy.
Henley.
Woo!
Yeehaw!
I'm so anytime yeah, I can come to Jersey, it's always a bonus.
You knew you were coming back.
I was very happy. I got some tomatoes on the way, even though they're not in season.
Some farm fresh.
No, I just went in shop
right. New Jersey Turnpike tomatoes. Picked them right on the pike.
So, that's the bad thing about the tomatoes, you know. They're delicious in season, but then if you, because of the jug handle and the way the roads are in Jersey, you can miss your turn and end up spending like $68 on the tomatoes.
Yes.
You have to keep retolling.
Get on going
like,
south.
By God, I'm going back. I don't care. Once you see them there and they're so ripe and luscious and delicious, and then you miss the turn, you're like, oh, God damn it.
These roads have got to be connected.
That's true. Somehow. I saw him. He's right there. He's right
he's
there.
He's right there.
I can see the basket. I can see the price.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He's right on route.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember one of my Jersey bits I would do, routes 1 and 9. Like there's a road.
Yep.
It's just and it's two roads meet, but then after they've met, they call it routes 1 and 9. That's the name of one road.
Yeah.
True.
I was on 1 and 9. That's what you said.
Yeah. That's right.
Take 1 and 9. Into
exactly.
The city.
Makes perfect sense.
What? That's two roads. I can't take two roads into the city.
Exactly.
Do I take 1 and then 9? Do I take? Yeah, no. It's 1 and 9. Get on 1 and 9.
Yes. Who's on first?
Who's on first? Exactly. I don't know.
And that's the one you told me.
Third base. Totally.
What's that?
That's the one you told me to avoid. It's perpetually under construction or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's city bound, I think, right now. It's being worked on.
It's brutal.
And it was built in the Depression.
I'll bet it was.
The Pulaski Skyway.
It's depressing being on it now.
Was built in the middle of the Depression and had not been rebuilt.
Or worked on.
Or really worked on at all. Yeah, no, they patched it.
No, right.
We used to patch it, and we used to marvel at how they were able to patch holes in a bridge, you know. But yeah, they're totally rebuilding it now. Well, and they're like, the city bound is going to be closed for 2 years or something, I think.
Oh, God. Jesus. Yeah.
And for a while, when they first did it, the turnpike, the other way to get to the Holland Tunnel, was also closed.
Yes.
Well, of course.
And it's like, oh, great.
They're making you work for
it.
So
now we have no way.
They're making you work.
There's no way to get to the tunnel.
By God, you
want you to stay in Jersey. No,
exactly. You got to find.
New York is like, fuck.
You got to find Sylvester Stallone to lead you through on foot.
Right. We're gonna find a way.
Hello, go anybody.
That's two random Stallones today.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
today's
good.
Today's recordings. So what are you up to, Henley? What's going on?
I've been on the road. I was out opening for Ron White and Kathleen Madigan.
Ron White?
And we were down south. We were in Charleston, South Carolina, and North Carolina with him, Wilmington. And then I was out in Illinois with Kathleen. And we were in the corn, man. We flew into Chicago and drove like 2 hours south to Bloomington.
Is that where the hot sauce picture
and
was
so
that you
then, posted? That was the second day. The second day, we went another 90 miles further into the corn. And that's where we were sponsored by Dave. Dave's Body Shop.
Yes, yes. There's a photo.
It says the theater, and it says tonight Kathleen Madigan, and I'm in front gesturing to it. And
sponsored by
Dave's
Body
Shop. And we got backstage.
Is that a strip club? Or
no,
a
it's a real body shop. And the dude's like in Galesburg, Illinois, because I said from the stage, everything they told me about Dave in the first 15 minutes, you know, he's the mayor, he's the dog catcher, he's making hot sauce, he's organically growing whiskey in his backyard, or he's doing like 19 things, but he really does own the body shop.
And it, it just happened. Wow. You're a goddamn modern day Renaissance man, Dave. Yeah. I had him writing a haiku a day and working on a bonsai tree. He's a master of double Dutch. You know, yeah, I'm just throwing weird.
Was that his hot sauce?
That
in
was
the picture?
His hot sauce in the picture.
Dave's own?
And they make it down in Louisiana, so it's green, legitimate.
Right?
All he did, and I think I solved it, which he sort of admitted. If you've ever gone, you guys have been to the Cracker Barrel,
yeah,
right?
Oh, sure.
All right, so if you get greens at the Cracker Barrel and you ask them for pepper sauce, they bring you this little jar that has all these little tiny green peppers in it that have been soaked in vinegar, and you sprinkle that on top of your greens, and it's hot sauce.
He just grounds it up.
But it's clear. Yes, he's pureed that. That's all it is. I could tell as soon as I tasted it.
He does and that they in the back of a body shop.
Yeah, and, and then they all started going, I'm like, when he gets here, by God, I figured the minute I touched it on my tongue, I'm like, ooh, I know what he's
That's
done.
What it is.
But it's delicious.
It's good.
It completely works, even though, and they were all like, they wouldn't admit that I was right, and I'm like, I know I'm right. And then they were all blushing.
You busted them deep in the corn, children of the corn.
You know, Alabama is closer to Louisiana than Illinois, so I'm going to guess that one.
Dude, I remember when, like, I was as busy as ever. Like, Cash Cab was still going. I got an offer to host the Who's Still Standing show on NBC.
That's the one with the game show with the floor.
Yeah,
that's
when
the one that collapsed underneath
the floor. Yeah,
I love that.
Oh, it was fun, right?
It was
slow motion. People falling to their death.
and he's telling us behind the scenes, we run into him about like people are getting hurt.
Oh yeah,
bad stuff.
That's a good story,
they didn't
actually
think it through sometimes.
Oh
yeah,
no, for real,
like, dude. Ugh. That's a good story for another ep for sure.
Uh-huh. I'll left
but
it
so,
at the tease.
As soon as you said in the corn in Illinois, I thought of this. So I'm already shooting Cash Cab. I get the offer to host Who's Still Standing. We make that deal work. Discovery Channel says you can do it on one condition. I'm like, oh boy, what is this going to be? Right. And they're like, you have to host another show for us called Best in the Business.
Okay.
I'm like, fantastic.
Enough. Sure.
Good deal. I get notices from them saying that we're starting shooting Cash Cab the next season and Best in the Business on the same day, one in Boston and one in New York.
Oh, nice.
Oops. Hey, guys.
You take the 1-9 there.
Take the 1-9. So then I get the notice about the other show. So now I have three shows going on. Sweet. And I also have a tour of colleges and theaters and shit going on all the time.
Jesus.
I don't have any. I don't have a minute at this time. I'm the busiest I ever was, really, in my life. And I shoot Cash Cab all day, and I go and get on a plane, and I fly to Chicago, and I come out of the airport, and there's a limo, and I go, and I'm so exhausted because I was up late the night before and traveled the week before. Blah blah blah. You guys know how the whole
thing
is. I just walk out. I open the guy opens the door to the limo. I climb into the back of the stretch limo and promptly pass out on the seat.
Yeah, right.
When I wake up, the car's not moving.
Okay.
So and I arrive somewhere. Wow, we must have gotten to the gig. I get up. The sunroof is open, which I didn't open it. And I don't know if it was open when I got in or not. So I stand up. I'm like, oh, I'm going to stand up and look out.
Sure.
Cornfield. Surrounding me completely. Corn as far as I can see. I'm like, what the fuck? And I look, and the driver is standing there with his back to me. He's not yet aware that I'm awake.
Okay.
Smoking. He's standing there smoking a cigarette.
Okay.
And I go, did we make a wrong turn? And he jumps. Hey!
Hey, Tree.
He's got a cigarette in one hand. He's got his phone.
Okay.
Which had the GPS, but there's no signal where we are. And he says, I fucked up. I'm sorry. I'm like, how do we end up out here?
Is it a paved road?
No. No, it's a fucking dirt road.
It's a dirt road.
I mean, we're in the middle of a cornfield.
Okay.
I don't mean like we're at the I should have been more clear.
Right. You didn't drive through and hit the stalks.
Sounds like a pissed off Discovery or something.
We're not at a crossroads of actual roads with cornfields on all sides.
No.
We're on a farm road that goes through a cornfield.
Right.
It's an actual road, but it's dirt.
Wow, sure.
He followed the GPS.
And that's where
it took slowly you. Watched things get worse and worse and worse. Until he was in the middle of a cornfield.
This is not right.
And I was asleep, so he decided to just put the car in park and get out and have a think.
Regroup. Oh, that's wonderful. That's wrong.
Crazy, right?
That's great.
That is, it's out there everywhere.
Turns out we were only a few miles. We were 2 or 3 miles from where we wanted to be. But we were
I'm
lost.
You,
I've had that happen with GPS a couple times.
I think from Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, all the way as you keep Iowa and Nebraska. There's like 8 states of where if you just that happens to you. There's 8 states at least where if all of a sudden whoop and then. Corn.
You could disappear easily.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's nothing.
Just nothing out there, man. Yeah.
Pretty insane.
Yeah.
But the first 2 nights were in the corn, and then the third night we were back in Naperville, which is a suburb of Chicago. So we got the real show.
I think I've been to Naperville.
You know, and the real show.
Illinois.
Out of the corn. It was great. It was really, really fun.
With Kathleen. Awesome.
Yeah. And the Ron shows, we were on the tour bus just riding around with him doing the regular thing.
Must have been fun, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's out of his mind.
Yeah.
He's out of his mind.
He's a funny dude.
Yeah, he's funny, dude.
You know, I love his thing about the when he's on the debate team in high school.
No, he's got a million.
He got kicked out for standing up and saying, oh, yeah, Lil, fuck you. He's all upset. He's like, I thought that I had won.
Top that. So he's out of his mind crazy. He was, I did an interview with Fox. Really asked me, he has a show on Sirius, and he interviewed me. And we were talking about where I had a joke in my act that Ron wanted, and he had one in his act that I wanted. And we were always talking about trading them because we never
swap meet.
Yeah, but mine worked. His wasn't working. Mine worked, and I've still heard him tell it. He didn't tell it a few weeks ago, but I've still heard him tell it like as recently as a year ago. It's a fat joke, but he throws it in there. And so, but I was always not wanting to trade with him because mine worked and his was still a work. I'm like, well, fix yours, and I'll be happy to trade with you.
Right. I swear. Circle back.
Yeah, totally.
I love it.
So,
joke swap.
So then I was somewhere and we were all laughing. It was all real good natured and giggly, you know, funny. And we're hanging out and Foxworthy was there. I think we're on the Funny Bone Road somewhere, Texas. And this comes up and Foxworthy goes, he tells me off to the side. I know how to fix that. So just trade with him, and then I'll tell you, and it's fixed. You know.
Now, you didn't ask first.
So I didn't ask what the punchline was. I knew if it was Foxworthy, it was gold.
It was okay.
Or I had a 99% chance, 90% chance at least, that, you know, because he was so excited.
Yeah.
Because we'd all three openly talked about how to fix it for so far, and none of us could really figure it out. And then so he's the one that just struck him first, and that's why he was like, ooh, trade him now because I got it. And I was like, okay. Right. And so we traded, and then then we told Ron within a minute, and he's like, God damn it! God damn it! And he's looking right at Foxworthy, and he's like, I know you told him that. He did not think of that on his own. I know you told him that. He did not think of that. I've been trying to think what to say for 2 goddamn years. You walk in here, and
what's the bit?
It was really silly. It was
first,
just,
what's the one... Mine was a fat joke
about like I saw, you know, 450 pound woman in a thong on the beach in West Palm, and it looked like somebody stretched a rubber band over a head of cauliflower. And then it went into this whole other thing. I had a whole bunch of gross where it ends up there's a piece of corn on my butt, and you know, it's a whole weird long.
Yeah.
But it was basically hinged around the fat joke of rubber band stretched right head of cauliflower.
Funny.
And so that was, you know, it was a fat joke. So it was vintage in like 87.
It's so, well honed now.
But
well,
you know, when he needs his fat joke, I've heard him, he'll still throw this in the show every now and then. And so he's got a cousin Ray that only dates big women, real, real big women. And so sometimes when he goes into that chunk of material, my joke gets a reprieve.
You know, right.
So now his was, we were talking, it was around the holidays, and we were talking about how everybody has a family member. And I asked him something about, y'all going to get together, da, 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 da. And he goes, well, you know, there's always a couple of wild cards in the family.
Yes.
So all of us don't come because you never know who's going to get too hammered. And then it turns into, Daddy never loved me. And I thought that was so universal. It didn't matter where you're from.
Yeah.
That everybody has the drunken holiday and gets the whiny Daddy never loved me or some version of that, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, that's just such a great idea. I go, that alone will get a laugh if you just lead them with that, or especially around Christmas.
Yeah.
And then you could go with this 800 ways. And so and this every 6 months, I check back with him. No, can't think of anything else. Can't think of anything else. So then Foxworthy that day told me, all you do is wait, because I always laughed at Daddy Never Loved Me. And then you come back in and go, that's because he wasn't your real daddy. And then it turned into a whole, you're Korean. You know, there's this whole, that had like eight other tags
Didn't
with it about,
wonder?
Yes, exactly. Exactly, about the food and the culture. Didn't you wonder why they called you Doha?
Everyone's so much bigger than you.
That's right. Smell like kimchi all the time.
So, right. But yeah, it really did turn into, there were other after Run Your Real Daddy, there were three other things before it got to you're Korean, and then that's the road it went down. It went down the food and the culture, but yeah, but that was really a million years ago. But that's, you know, anyway, he's a crazy man, Ron Hunt. Good God.
Oh shoot, man. So we gotta tell a story, right? It's gotta be what are we talking about?
Or I can
about?
Sit here and watch the squirrels.
There's a lot of squirrels. There's a lot of
squirrels. The animals. The view.
Oh, God.
I was the Bailey Zoo.
I was at my brother's lake house, and he's got a trophy room. I was there a couple weeks ago. The only regret, I posted a couple of pictures. I didn't take a picture of the trophy room. He has a trophy room that's like Teddy Roosevelt. Like, there's a full-on grizzly bear in it.
Wow.
And he's killed everything in the trophy room.
That makes me think of Roadhouse.
Is there a trophy?
He's the bad guy.
Right.
He owns the whole town.
Sure, of course. But he's got a wolf. There's a mountain lion. All kinds of crazy stuff. The Mexican turkey, it looks a lot like the American turkey, except its head is a bright, like, turquoise blue.
Hidden by a sombrero.
Well, to blend in with the sombrero, probably. But anyway.
For real, it has a natural color.
Yeah, bright blue head. Yeah, yeah. And the tail is not as, it fans out and has more colors. And it's not as big as the American turkey, but it has more colors like a peacock tail. So you got the blue head. So he's back to the squirrels. In the corner of the trophy room is a fake log that he has erected from floor to ceiling and put like 11 different branches on it. And on each branch is every kind of squirrel that he's ever killed from the planet Earth. And not just the ones. Knew red, gray, and black. That's all I know, right? And he's got them with the head's like a white. He's like panda squirrels. The head's white. The rest of it's black. if it exists, and that's in the squirrel family.
Some antibiotic will clear that up.
The weird thing is, you're looking at all this going, I didn't know there were this many kind of squirrels ever, you know. And he's killed everything in the room. He has traveled to all these countries and killed everything in this room
and brought it home.
And not only is all the weird surroundings, you're sitting there looking at all of it, you're like, fuck, I thought four kinds, maybe there's like at least eight different kinds. And then the second thing you know is they're all in little poses. So one's standing there like he's about ready to do like a tap dance, one's giving the aw shucks, one's asleep on the log, one's got a lookout, one's doing like a lookout pose. It's totally bizarre.
Oh my God,
it's the craziest.
So you got to get a photo
this
of that.
This is Terry, my older brother, yes.
Wait, which one has the barn door head?
So, that's Mike. That's my brother Mike, who was always getting in fights and getting in
hee-haw.
Trouble. Now Terry's hee haw. Terry's hee haw. And because he was so country that they said he should be on hee haw. So in Alabama at the time, they made so much fun of him. They said, you're so country. This is Alabama people making fun of you. And hee haw was the big variety show country music hit. And they're like, you are country enough to be on hee haw. And he's like, what are you talking about?
Dag nabbit.
So yeah,
Dad, burn it.
Then he popped back out at some hay.
But Mike was talking about Mike. Mike was the one that was. Mike would get in a fight, and the guy he would usually take the first punch, and he would just sort of duck and let him clock him real good on the side of the head or the temple. And then he'd go, you hit me in the worst spot, my head. And then it was just over. And the guy's hand would hurt, and then he'd just beat the piss out of him. Everything. But he loved yelling at you, hit me in the mind. Like, the guy would go in and like, my head, no. Like, I got a head like a goddamn barn door. He can take four more shots. I'm standing here. It's okay.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah.
That's it. Some movie. There's a movie where there's two guys about to get in a fight. And one guy's talking about how hard his head is.
Right.
And he smashes a bottle over his head.
Yeah.
That Roadhouse also?
So, amazingly, no.
It's Swayze and Stallone Day.
The other guy just clocks him. The other guy's scared to death. He doesn't have any choice. He's got to fight this guy.
So.
And he clocks him and knocks him out. And then he's like, well, I guess the key there is don't hit him in the top of the head.
But now, I can steer this into speaking of Hee Haw Henley.
Hee Haw.
This is why the story I was going to tell today.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This was a Hee Haw Henley idea.
Okay.
So he's 12 years older than I am, and he played football at Auburn, so he's a King Auburn, so he's Mr. Plugged In everywhere. And I'm going back in the fall. I'm going to graduate in December, so I only got one semester left, and I only got to take one class.
Right.
So, and I'm graduating, so he knows. And the class is Monday and Wednesday from 1 to 3. So the rest of the week, I'm 21 years old. I've got nothing to do. I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to go to football season. That's what we do. You know, both my brothers played at Auburn. So somewhere leading up to the going back to school in the fall, I was hanging out with him in Birmingham. And out of the clear blue, he goes, "You know what you ought to do since you ain't doing anything? I mean, one class. I think you ought to start making book for the whole, you know, good God, those college boys, I'm sure they want to bet on the football games. You did college and the pros, and, you know, I know a dude that'll tell you about it if you want to. I think it'd work.
You should start taking bets.
You should start taking bets. Be a bookmaker." He's suggesting going to crime.
Is this your older brother?
That's my older brother. I'm the youngest.
He's
12.
Thinking about you and what you could do with
and
your
what
life.
You could do just for these few weeks, just for fun.
Crime.
Just for a little fun. Well, see, the key, I found out before it all got going, he knew something that later came up, because as we started getting closer to this happening, I was like, this is not a good idea. And the law in Alabama at the time, this is totally true, no matter how big your gambling operation, if it's the first time they catch you, it goes down as a misdemeanor, and it's a $35 ticket.
Oh.
And that's it. Wow. So you could have been operating for years and never gotten caught and have a $1 million all kind of crazy operation going on.
Right.
If the
people
first time they get you,
once.
There's that. Yeah. After that, it got crazy.
Slap
and
on the wrist.
Yeah. But the first time, so he knows this. So that's because I was worried. I'm the worrier in the family.
He's like, go in. And even if you get busted,
you shut it down. I'll pay for every, it's a ticket. I'll come get you. They're going to arrest you. I'll come get you. We'll pay $35, and I'll be sorry I ever suggested this.
Sounds good.
And I'm like, yes, exactly.
One day you'll tell the story on the radio.
So totally. And so he took me to the guy. I said, let's do it. He takes me to a man's house. I'm sure he's still alive. And supposedly the house that he takes me to, the dude had won from somebody. So this is a full-on Birmingham bookie dude.
Uh-huh.
He has won this house. Supposedly, the guy's been a bookie for a million years, and he's been in and out of jail and been busted, but it ain't slowed him down any, because it's still Alabama, and I guess at the time or whatever, they don't care about the gambling. They're just not really on it. They're not worried about it. They're worried about, you know, let's round up the black people and do something stupid, you know. So he knows all this, so he takes me to this dude's house, and I spend an afternoon with him. He literally drops me off at, like, lunch on a Saturday, college football Saturday, right when the season's starting, and I hadn't gone back to school yet. So I spend the whole day with him. He tells me everything you need to do. He talks to me about laying off bets, and basically you want to have the same amount of winners as losers, and you charge the losers 10%, so that's where you make your money. So if you make if you take in 10 grand worth of bets, you want to have 5 grand worth of winners and 5 grand worth of losers. So the losers pay the winners, and then you take the 10% from the losers. So you're making $500 a week for just moving money around, basically, is the key. And he's talking about moving lines and sports lines and all this stuff. So I go back. I tell a friend of mine this at Auburn, and he goes, "Dude, I'm in a frat. I'll hook us up, man. All these guys, they just
we'll get all these
guys.
Well,
all these guys. There's 150 guys in this frat, you know."
Oh, shit.
And he goes, "Even if they all just bet $20, that's 150 times 20, $3,000, you know." And so I'll cut you in. We'll get this all going on.
Dollar signs in your eyes.
Right. And then we know.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, "Oh, and you know so-and-so, he's a Fiji. And you know so-and-so, he's a Lambda Chi. We'll get everybody in on this."
Wow.
And so I get a guy at each frat house to be my collector. And so I'm not talking to the 150. They are. It's the dudes they live with.
Right,
and
you're just dealing with one dude at each house.
Once a week, one of my four guys would come to me with all the bets, and we would eat chicken wings and compile it all and sit there, you know. So within weeks, we're making money hand over fist. It's just all you learn everything about why Vegas is on the map. More people lose than win. Nobody really wins. Everybody loses. Some people lose horribly.
Every now
and then, somebody wins. They're still going to lose.
Yeah.
Within a month into this, everybody knows I'm the bookie on campus. People are finding me at football games trying to get another bet in, because I'm like, "I closed at noon. Get back to your goddamn seat. Stop it." They're coming up with little parlay sheets. Yeah, a little parlay.
I need this.
Exactly. And I'm like, they're like, "What's your biggest piece of advice?" And the whole 11 or 12 weeks I did it, don't bet. I'd say don't bet. It's a take a girl out, do something else. You're not going to win. It's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Right.
They didn't
wouldn't listen to you.
No, and they didn't really care because it was all of them just wanted to talk about it. So nobody's even betting $50. They're all betting $25, $30. Yeah. I had a minimum of 25. Just so at the frat house, they can go, who you got this week, Ben? Oh, I like LSU. What about you, Ben? Oh, man, Arkansas. You know, it's just some bullshit frat boy thing.
Right.
And so we're getting them on quantity, not, yeah. You know, so it's kind of harmless, you know.
Yeah.
So we're raking money in, and one of the frat guys I knew, he reminded
like
me.
How much do you think you were making?
We made about $22,000 in 10 weeks or something like that, a couple of grand a week, you know, something.
That's great.
You know, yeah.
And what so, year was this?
84.
Wow, that's a lot more than it is now.
And so my buddy, he one day said, you know what, this is terrible. And what we should do, he goes, I've been thinking about this. And he goes, I don't know if it's my old Baptist grandmother in my head, but ill-gotten gains. If we hang on to this, there's something bad might happen to us. We need to blow this money. We need to blow this money. Yeah. We need to start throwing parties and taking girls places. And just, we have to blow this money. You know, so now now there's about five of us. We're 21, 22. I've got the one class a week. We got a couple grand a week coming in.
And this guy's morals are kicking in right now.
And so.
Yeah, in a way that guides you into blowing a lot of money.
And when I agree with him wholeheartedly. I don't want to save any of it. I agree with him 1,000,000%.
Let's do it.
And so the first thing we do, the first thing we do, there's these three or four hot girls that wouldn't give him the time of day, and he wants to take them to lunch at this fancy place. That'd be like, even then, if you start getting the drinks going, it'd still be a $200 lunch back then.
Right.
So in Boogerville, Auburn, lunch. Alabama, yeah. And it's king crab legs and mimosas and so we're asking. He just starts asking three or four of them. Me and Hanley are taking a bunch of people to lunch and blah blah blah. You guys want to go? Oh yeah, we want to go. You know, these girls here. And so we started doing that, and we started. He bought a fake Rolex, and everybody thought it was real because we were blowing so much money.
Right.
So within a month, everybody's like, he's got a Rolex. You saw they spent $500 last week at the Hungry Hunter. so we're building, we're trying. Within weeks, everybody knows we're just blowing this money all over Auburn. And on my birthday at a place that's not even that fancy, but they had Dom on the menu. And there's probably 11 or 12 of us. It's my birthday. So there's a big group of us. So my friend goes, bring us the bottle of Dom. And the waitress has to come back over and go, we don't have it. And we're like, it's on the goddamn menu. And she's like, it's been on the menu since we've opened. We've never had it. The owner just thought it looked cool to have it on there. She goes, we've been open 2.5 years. No one's ever called him on this. You're the first person that's ever asked for this. I had to call him at home and find out. And I go, what do you tell? He said, go back and just tell me what I told you. That was just a trick and good for him. He's the first guy in almost 3 years. So we couldn't get.
Great.
So then we went to.
You're like, all right, four. Budweiser.
Yeah, exactly.
Corn squeezing.
So
let me get the grilled cheese.
Mac.
Tater tots.
Right. So we went to the only place that has live music, and you go see bands, called the War Eagle Supper Club. It's still there. And it's a big 300-seater. And so
the War Eagle Supper Club.
Yeah, if you cheer for Auburn, you say War Eagle for some reason. Right, so this is just a little outside of town cinder block building that, you know, can stay open as long as you want it because it was right over the line.
Oh, okay.
So they had liquor before everybody had liquor back in the day when probably the rest of the campus was dry. So this place has been sitting there for 70 years or something, you know.
And making money.
And oh, yeah. And so we're in there one night, and it's all packed, and this band's playing, and my friend, the ill-gotten gang guy, the other guy, my partner, he's like, he goes, hey, I think we need, he goes, how much money you got on you? And I probably had $900, you know,
in my pocket,
you know, I'm hillbilly rich,
you know, about 900.
I'm 7 foot tall and bulletproof, you know, and so he goes, I think I probably got 7 or 8 myself. And so the manager of the club's name was Mad Dog. He goes, I say we go do the Old West. And I'm like, what do you mean do the Old West? He goes, we go back here and find Mad Dog and go, how much for drinks for everybody? On now, me. And so he goes, just make him for an hour. So he calls him over and he goes, how much for drinks for everybody for the next hour? And me and Henley pay for everything. Now, tell me, quick. 1, 2, 3. And Mad Dog sends him, $1,200. $1,200. So we each give him, we pull out the money, boom, 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 give me $1,200. So the band it coincided with the
band. I love that his name is Mad Dog.
Oh, yeah. And still have no idea what his name is. And so the band takes a break. Mad Dog walks us onto the stage, and there's a bell on the stage where if somebody leaves a big tip near the stage, they ring the bell, you know. And so he's standing over by the bell. We're on the stage. He dings the bell about 80 times, points to the two of us, and goes, "Drinks for everybody on these two fucks for the next hour. Anything you want. No top shelf." So yeah, that was our. Then we got him again later on in the same night because the first hour went so well. Now we're like, how much we got left? We're like, how much can we get for whatever we had
right,
left?
And he's like local heroes.
Yeah, and he's like 40 minutes. But he went back on and rang the bell again. And went another 40 minutes.
Everyone was drinking. So, my chips,
oh God.
Too.
So you know this is so it's we're just riding high and everything's great and you can't you know it couldn't go be going any better.
It's
and,
all on the bookkeeping.
Right.
The football.
Yeah. Right. And so now here's where it all goes wrong. Here's where it all goes wrong. Like I said earlier, we only had people betting 20 and 30 bucks, right? So about near 7 or 8 weeks in, we get this guy. He wants to start betting 100, 200, 300 a game, and he's the only one who wants to do this. And we don't give a shit, you know, yeah. So we talk about it, and we let him bet, you know. And so over the first 2 or 3 weeks he bets, he wins big. He probably wins about 1,700, 1,800 bucks over 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Right.
And so and me and the other guy don't give a shit. We're still making money. Yeah. We don't care. We're still, woo! But he's the only anomaly. He's the only anomaly on here that's all of a sudden we got a high roller, so
right.
to speak. You know?
you've got to be paying out some.
So,
you're
yeah.
not used to.
But we didn't really. So he calls after these 3 weeks of winning. He calls him with a crazy. He loses his ass on Saturday, and he's trying to do all these crazy bets on Sunday with the NFL to make up for it. And he's right. asking for extra credit and wanting to bet 500 instead of 300. And so I'm talking about the other guy. And we let him do it all. And he goes massively, like every idiot does, he goes in to try to fix it all in a day. And now he's down like 1,750. Right. So if he'd made 1,800 from us in the first 3 weeks, he's now lost all that. And he's trying to double down on Monday Night Football. He wants to go all 1,750, double or nothing, and he'll be back at zero. You know, and I'm like, ah, that's so the big win. Again, we'd only let him do 500 a few times, and now he wants to go 1750. And I'm like, you could just give us back. I've given you 1800 in the past 3 weeks. You couldn't have spent it all. Me and Dave are the only ones spending money in this town.
In this whole town right now, yeah.
You know, and so
we bought all your fucking drinks on Saturday.
So he wants to he so whatever. And I asked the other guy, and he doesn't care. And so and I remember I said, well, look, I'm going to have to move the line. If the spread was a 10-point spread that so-and-so was supposed to win by 10, I'm like, that's too much money. I'm going to make it 12. Uh-huh. You know, so you're going to have to win by 13 points. Well, that's something I learned at bookie school.
Oh, yeah.
On crazy out-of-the-way bets like that are things where you're really going to be exposed.
Yeah.
Feel free to move the line. Encourage them
Change
not to
the
make
spread.
The bet.
Yes.
And you don't really want to scare them off.
Yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
he totally loses. And he owes $3,500, and he loses on the 1 point. He loses by 11. So me moving the line, yeah, me moving the line.
Wow, that was the difference.
Yes, yeah. Has ruined it. And so, all right, so now
he's really into you guys.
And he owes $3,500, and we can't figure out. So we always collected on Tuesday after Monday Night Football. I'd go around and gather up everybody, and so he dodges us. He dodges us for a week. He doesn't make any bets the next week. He's running and hiding. We can't find him. And so I find out where he lives, and I go over and let all the air out of his tires. I didn't slash his tires. I just went in the middle of the night. All four tires of his car was sitting on the ground.
A gentleman.
Well, I said it took forever. Literally, I was sitting there. Well, I had a gauge. I had a tire gauge.
Oh.
And so that was – but I put sugar in his gas tank. I poured five pounds of sugar in his gas tank, cleaned that all up, and then let all four air out of his tires. And then so, yeah, I was there for about an hour and a half probably in this apartment complex, you know, from like 2:30 to 4,
oh my
you know,
God.
So I'm letting him know where I knew where he lived, and this, you know, this can't be bad luck, and he should take my call,
right.
You know, and so then that doesn't work, and I go back to where he is, and he wants to get he wants to have a meeting at like you know McDonald's or something,
public
neutral
place, yeah.
Neutral.
Yeah.
So
I'll meet you under the golden arches,
So in a well lit area near the play pit,
the sugar will do that.
So over 1 billion served.
He wants to give me two checks. He's got, here's a check for 1,700 of it, and here's a check for the other. And I'm like, man, I don't take checks. This ain't going to work. You can't, this ain't going to, you know. And he goes, right. one's, I've got this money in the bank now, and then wait a week. I post-dated that one. And I'm like, no, you got to give me money. And then go, if that money's in the account, go cash it tomorrow, and you can give me half of it, and then I'll wait a week. I don't care. I'm glad we're talking. You were hiding, but I ain't taking a fucking check. If that money, if that first check's in there like you're telling me, then we'll go tomorrow.
Then we'll go get it. Yeah.
And so he's like, so he disappears again. And so now we're wondering about what to do. So we decide, I find him again. He's living in a trailer park outside of town. He's moved. And we send a big, large man that was a defensive end on the football team that later played 5 years for the Green Bay Packers. A giant man.
This thing's sounding more and more pro, man. You know.
So we send Humphrey was his name. So we send Hump over to the trailer to scare him to death, right. And not do anything to him, but just be sitting there when he comes home from class. You've got Hump sitting in your living room, saying you got to pay him the money,
right?
Yeah. You know, and bringing
Billy
up
Tarantino
and bringing
That's
up
a good call,
yeah.
Oh yeah, and he's. You know, so this terrifies him. So
so he comes home and the giant dude.
Yeah, yeah,
in
his house,
trailer,
you know. And so we give Hump like
you
two
must
or
pay.
Yeah, we give him like $200 or $300 to go do this.
Right.
And so and it was all fine. And he comes back and tells, I think you'll be hearing from him real soon, you know. And so the next day, nothing, a couple of days, he's gone again. Now he's gone from the trailer park. He's vanished again. So now I find out where his hometown is, and I call his mother.
That's when.
Because I'm a good-hearted person.
Yes. I'm going to call your mom.
I'm going to call his family. Everyone who answers is getting the story, whether it's mama or daddy.
Yeah,
whoever answers is getting the story.
It's just funny, for all you see in movies and, you know, about people who don't make good on bets with bookies.
Right.
They never call your mom.
Yeah. Henley does.
I'm going to call your mother.
We're in college. I know where else is he going to go. It's not like he's an adult, you know.
It's not like you're going to shoot him.
No, yeah, right. And so
he calls his mom.
His mother answers the phone, and I tell her who I am. I say, hey, I'm Vic Henley, and you know, I'm like, I've been making book for the whole semester here at Auburn, and it's not my operation. I'm just a front man. I work for some very serious people who live in Birmingham, Alabama, and Mobile, Alabama, and other cities. This is what they do for a living, and I assure you they're going to want their money, and your son's going to have to pay this money or something, but he's hiding, and I will not hesitate to turn in your home address, your phone number. I've got his last two addresses. I'm washing my hands of it. There's nothing I can do. Don't blame me if something bad happens, or you could just pay me the money.
Right.
You know, and she's like, well, I don't know, and I'll have to talk to his father, and da 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 da. And I'm like, okay, I'll call you back. I'll give you a day or two to think about it. And so I call back 2 days later, and the dad answers. And you can tell, like, they've been waiting. He's like, hey, I can't believe you're threatening my life. Like, I ain't threatening anybody, dude. Ain't threatening anybody. Just telling you, I work for people, and I'm not going down for this. And it's all a lie. None of this is true at all.
There's no people.
I've made it all up. There's no fucking
but you're sticking
Vito
to it.
Corleone. Well, that was my last play.
I work for Hick Benley.
Dangerous man. Dangerous man. King of the Dixie Mafia. And so the dad and I, he's not even really that mad. He's like, look, you're not getting it. We don't have it. And I don't know. As you know, he's lost it. He's blown whatever he won from you. You're just out of luck. You can tell whoever you want. This is where we live, 311 Jones Street, Gordo, Alabama. He's like, so fuck you. Sorry, you ain't getting it back. And I'm like, all right, man, no problem. Thanks. And then that was it, and I knew it was all over, and I had lost everything.
Yeah.
And then I found out, but within a week or so, something made me go sniffing around where he used to live again, and I checked around. I met some people. He quit school. It ran him off for the semester. He didn't. The phone call at least made them drag his ass home, whether they were mad or scared or both
quit
or whatever.
School, dummy.
But it made him quit school. I was happy to hear that. I was happy. Okay, now the final chapter of all this is 2 or 3 years later. My friend, the partner, all right, the fake Rolex guy. He was in the first frat that I talked about. He is back at an Auburn football game. He's at a band party where everybody could come. He's out on the lawn watching the band. There's 200 or 300 people standing out there. And he looks over and sees the dude. There he is, here over here, standing at the back of the crowd all by himself. got a beer and a koozie, just watching the band. Like, it's, you at Auburn, you can mill around. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's in the frat. My buddy was, remember? So he gets closer and closer, make sure that it's him. So the kid's obviously gone back and is finishing up school, you know, or hell, he's there for a football game. I don't know. But it's 2 or 3 years later. And my friend goes in, as a member of the frat, he goes and finds the current president, rounds up some pledges. You know, the pledges have to do whatever you tell them to do, you know. Right. And so he finds 3 or 4 of them and goes, see that guy over there? Go over there and beat the fuck out of him. Go over there. And, just, and they're like, what do you mean? And they're like, no, just go over there and do the old, start shoving him and just do the bullying frat boy thing that everybody hates. But he's by himself, and I'm like, I want to see his ass on the ground. And I got $20 for everybody. He gives everybody $20. And so,
wow.
And so they, and he goes, he watches them. They huddle up for a second, and then they fucking make a beeline right over to him. And because he's kind of near the back, nobody sees it. And they shove him around a little bit and get him down on the ground. A couple of kicks to the gut, a couple of punches to the head. And then
holy
they scatter.
Shit, dude.
They scatter. And then my friend walks over as he's gathering himself and getting back to his feet. And the guy looks up and sees my friend. And my buddy goes, that was totally worth $3,500. And I can't wait to call Henley and tell him that I just saw this.
Oh,
and so, yeah.
God damn.
So.
And that dude is like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's that guy. It's, from whatever.
Yes, he knew.
He sent those guys.
Yes, he knew exactly what had just happened. Cause, and then he said our names. He said, and that was totally worth $3,500, and I can't wait to call Henley and tell it.
Wow.
And he did. He called me. I was somewhere. I was probably, by then, I'm 5 years into comedy, maybe. Or not maybe, but at least 3 or 4, but I'm traveling. And he found me. He found me on the road somewhere. This was before cell phones. But he found me somewhere. You're not going to believe, guess who got their ass whipped last Saturday night?
This is the country justice episode.
Country justice, baby.
I love it.
So,
oh, shit.
Right, and said the guy's name, and I knew exactly who he was talking
Damn.
About. Yeah.
I would have never thought. Vic Henley, bookmaker.
So do what?
Yeah. Dude, that's
never would have thought you in the bookmaking.
Well, like, it was really easy because I said it was quantity. It was harmless. It was 100 dudes betting $20-$30 just so they could go. You like it? It was complete.
It spirals.
It's, well, till one guy. Till one guy. Yeah. Next thing you know, I'm sending people to people's houses and calling families. And but to me, that part of it was really.
You're calling
I knew
the biggest man you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I got a job.
Yes. I said, I don't know how you feel about this, hump. And he goes, oh, I got it.
He's like, I'll just go be there. And
I think what I did was I asked a couple of dudes I on the football team that were like, you know, smaller dudes. I'm like, do you know him really well? Because I would love to send him over to do this. And they went, oh, he'd totally do that. It was something like,
yeah, wow.
Yeah, how much? I'm like, oh, $200-$300. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
When I was in college.
That's a great fucking story, man. God damn.
When I was in college, I had a friend, tiny little guy, good friend of mine, was a little Asian guy. And some guy hit his car. Backed into his car, smashed the door of his car, didn't have insurance, basically told my friend to go fuck himself.
Right.
Like, fuck you, I don't have insurance, I'm not doing anything. Screwed him out of it. His car didn't, he couldn't open the door anymore.
Right.
Totally ruined his car, fucked him out of, you know, we figured around $1,000 or $1,200.
Okay.
So my friend comes to me and goes, hey, man.
See, once you arrive at a number,
yeah.
You wanna
things are getting serious.
Yeah.
You want to come over to this guy's place with me and scare the shit out of him and get him to fucking pay me? And I was like, yeah, okay.
Why not?
Okay, I thought about it. I was like, the guy's fucked him. He's he's been an asshole.
Yeah.
He told me the whole story. He's confronted him a few times. And so we went over to his house, and I fucking roughed the dude up. He came out and
hammered.
I said, I'm gonna stand over here and see how this guy treats you, how he reacts with me not here. And I stood around to the side of the door, and the dude came out and right away opened the door and grabbed him. And I just went, that little thing in me went. And then I fucking had him by the neck, slammed him into the wall. And my little friend was like, you owe me money!
Yeah, of course.
Screaming in his face.
Yeah, hell yeah.
We got all the cash that he had.
Of course.
In his apartment that day. He paid, but.
I love him. No, that's, you know, when idiots have to be punished.
Oh, he was just. Yeah. If he hadn't been so small, the guy would not have thought he could do it.
You know? Right. And I think, and my buddy being the frat guy and prone to want to throw fights for no reason, as that as that whole frat did, I thought it was fine that I had taken the lie so far that they made him quit school. I was so, the con man, just hilarious lie, I would be giggling knowing I wasn't getting any of the money.
Listen, so I worked for people.
That was the double down, right?
That was my dangerous
people. That's what I was trying
to do. It's brilliant, dude. Your scheme to get the money at the end is fucking genius.
Mr. Venley.
Listen, I don't want to have to tell Mr. Venley about... I love how your Southern gangster characters, I give them like a New Jersey mob accent.
You know.
I had a Southern uncle. I had an uncle that... when I was growing up, so my grandmother remarried to this Japanese guy. He was Japanese, but he
I think I remember this, man, or that part of it anyway.
Yeah. He was I think we talked about it.
We did.
Lyndon Johnson's photographer. So he was a photographer, and he was, and then they had a son, and the son will I don't want to say his name, but
Lyndon Johnson's photographer's son.
No, yes.
With
yes.
your grandmother.
Yes. So, but he's Japanese. He's Japanese and he's Japanese and American, but he's very American, right? So he goes to Vietnam and works in army intelligence over there. So that involves a lot of, like, fucking torturing people and shit like that. And it gets really bugged out. Comes back and has, like, a bunch of marriages that don't work out, and he's holed up in South Carolina somewhere. And everybody knows he's a little
out there, off the reservation.
Yeah, he's out there. Right?
He's a rogue agent.
Yeah. So I'm in. I mean, it's just different, man. He's different, and he's like a real fucking redneck. If you can imagine a Japanese looking redneck, I mean,
that's funny.
They're all kind of Henry Cho's Korean.
Henry Cho's like, Korean.
That's
right.
Exactly like that. Yeah, sure. But even more.
But
like,
country. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Henry Cho's got a kind of refined quality.
Well, his parents
about
are doctors. He had. He's from money.
This guy's like, God damn. Like, what is he? God damn.
So, and he's Japanese.
Yeah.
Right.
But super American. Like, doesn't nothing with Japanese. Doesn't eat sushi, any of that shit, whatever. So I'm in college. I'm in North Carolina at school. I'm going to school, and I get this girl pregnant. Right. And I can't tell my parents. And this girl, very nice girl, but there was like, it was not going to, worked at a Hardee's. Like, it was like a bad, it's like, this thing was not going to go anywhere. So I couldn't tell my parents, and we decided we're going to get an abortion. Right. So I had to call him up. And he's like, I'll take care of it. I'll send you the money. And then I'll think of some work for you to do, right? So, he sends me, it's like $250.
Sure,
right.
So we go and do it, and it's fucking horrible. It's horrible and traumatic and fucking horrible or whatever. And then school ends, and he's like, "You gonna come down to South Carolina, and we'll think of some work for you to do." So I get down
there.
So you
can pay him back.
Pay him back for the $250.
Work it off.
And he had like a. Oh, like a mobile home kind of thing, like that he was living. He's like, I want you to paint it. So it was summer. He's like, that'll do it. That'll be the first thing.
Paint the trailer.
He's like, lunch in the refrigerator for you. There were these TV dinners, like Hungry Man's in the refrigerator.
That's pretty good.
Like, I'm going to show you how to do it, and you go on and do it. So he showed me how to do it, and he's like, and I want two coats, right? So it was hot as
two
fuck.
Coats.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. So I'm painting this goddamn thing every day and whatever, and eating these Hungry Mans and whatever. And then he'd like, at the end of the day, he's like, me and whoever his latest wife was, we go and shooting in a rock quarry. And he had, I mean, I've never seen so many guns. And she had her gun, like it's like her left
hand. Oh, of course, right.
Pearl handled, magnum.
Engraved.
Oh, yeah.
And he had, Annie had Oakley shotguns.
Yeah, all kinds, yeah.
And he just had this big pickup truck, and we fucking put him in there.
Load up the guns.
Go down to the rock quarry.
Everybody was shooting in a rock quarry. That's what you do.
Can't hurt anything.
Yeah, can't hurt anything. Right. Shooting in a rock
quarry. There's not really anything to shoot at.
Right. So it's like,
Fish ain't jumping.
Yeah, fish ain't jumping. They're shooting in the rock quarry. You know. And it was just like this crazy time. So then I I think I moved back to D.C. or something.
He was happy with the job.
He was happy with the job.
Okay.
Painted the trailer.
All right.
You did a good job and everything. And we were
same color it was already.
Kind of cool.
Just looks newer.
Cool.
Was it a different color?
It was a different color.
Oh, wow.
Because I'd also
you had to go primer. Yeah, you had this was a job.
Yeah, strip and primer. There was more to it.
Okay.
But I was like, you know, he did me a solid, and I was more than happy to do it.
Hell yeah.
So, but as I'm like hanging out with him, it's like I feel like he's losing his mind more and more and more. Like, you know, and it's like we can't go in certain places because he owes people money or some shit. It's just kind of bugged out, right? It's really bugged out. And he has all these schemes about how he's going to. So, move back to D.C. And this must have been, I don't know, about a couple years later. My grandfather, his father, dies and leaves. Right. He left close to $1 million, like and it was supposed to be split amongst my brothers and I for college.
Right.
But this dude is the not custodian,
executor
of the will. So I keep calling him, ask what's happening. He's like, I got a lot of things, a lot of red tape to be taken care of.
A lot of red tape.
You wouldn't have any idea.
A lot of red tape. He just said, I'm going to send you $500. Just tell you, hold you. I said, check, come $500. My brother's like, what's going on? Parents like, what's going on? I don't know. So it back and forth. So finally I get a lawyer. The accountant calls me. It's like, look, I got some bad news. The money's gone. I'm like, what? And I'm like, and he's like, yeah, the money's gone. He made some bad business investments. He bought a fucking mountain in South Carolina.
Fuck you, Kim Basinger. You just bought a town. I bought a mountain.
I bought a whole mountain.
He bought a fucking mountain there. And he's like, he was going to plow it so people could go up, but it was too steep. And there was these mountain lions and like all this bad shit happened.
Oh,
so he's
God.
Like, he owes all this money. So I get this lawyer, and we go to court, and then it's like,
Jesus.
He's disappeared. He's just gone somewhere.
He's up on the mountain.
He's up on the mountain. He's holed up on the fucking mountain, exactly where it is.
Dude, he's the original hillbilly.
Cold mountain.
Finally, the lawyer comes to me. He's like, look, I can't pursue this anymore because I don't have any more money to pay the lawyer. He's like, we're not going to win any money. Apparently, there's like 30 people this guy owes. You're last in line. So
he's been screwing people.
Yeah, he's been screwing people forever. And, you know, he's lost his fucking mind. He's got all these different identities and all this other kind of shit.
Holy
like,
shit.
He's like, I can't do it. He's like, you're kind of fucked. The money's just gone. So, you know, I'm fucking livid, right?
Oh,
I'm livid.
Yeah.
And, you know, the money was gone. So, doing comedy on the road, and I'm in a fucking shitty hotel somewhere, and I've kind of made peace with this thing. And I cut on the TV, and there's a rally. Of these guys, the Promise Keepers.
I remember that Christian men's organization.
Yeah. Christian men's organization. Yeah. And you go, and basically the thing is, whatever you do, whatever you've done, you go up, you kind of confess it publicly, and you're absolved of it in this organization. So it's like these guys, they'll stand up, and it's like, I did this. And I'm sitting there, and lo and behold.
I'll be damned.
It's goddamn, I won't say his name, but there
he
is.
Is.
And he doesn't even confess to the fucking thing he did. It was like eight other things. Like, I did this.
Someone
palms him
You're
on the head.
There
Jesus, praise Jesus. And it's done. And I'm thinking about it in the hotel room again. But that was the end of it.
Oh, God. You saw him. You saw him.
I saw him.
And he confessed to some other shit.
And left your shit out.
Left my shit out. Which I thought was, and the other shit was like bullshit. It was like, I wanted to open
Were you getting excited as he was going down the lift?
Yeah,
like, come on. Say it. Just say it. I don't believe what you're fucking doing, but say it anyway.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
Wow.
You know?
We had my father's brother. I think it was, put some money, there was some money that my grandfather had left.
Yeah.
But it got put into some real estate thing.
No money down.
Out west.
Yeah.
That just turned out to be a total sham. Ugh. It just led from one company, shell company, to another. And then in the end, surprise, surprise, there was no money left anywhere. It's like, great.
It's amazing.
How many people's fortunes have disappeared that way?
Yeah.
You know, people work their whole lives. To put it away, and then somebody fucking
just put it in the bank. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have thought that the bank would be
right
a good idea. You have to buy a mountain.
buy a mountain.
You know, invent the wheel. For the
that sounds like, can't we go after the mountain? No, you got to get a line for the mountain.
A lot of people.
You might get a little hill.
Everybody's trying to get a piece of that mountain.
One tree.
Oh, shit.
You get like a mining tunnel. That'd be good. It'd make some money out of this mountain.
But like you said the identities. That's funny to me because no matter how many identities he has, he's still the only Japanese hillbilly.
He's got all these pseudonyms.
Yeah, he still looks the same.
They're all like perfect. They go along.
You know, like Hiroki Jackson, Matsushichi Smith.
Like eight of those.
Yeah, exactly.
He thinks he's hiding.
Right, it's the same dude.
Wait, aren't you the Japanese hillbilly?
Yeah,
lives in that trailer with the fresh blue paint on.
Hell no!
It's
like the Don Cheadle.
No, that's Hiroiko.
That's right. Exactly.
Not this guy.
Johnson.
Yeehaw. I am Ju Shin.
Oh, shit, man.
Oh.
Williams.
Yes, exactly.
That's why he wanted you to paint the trailer another color.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's news moving in. Nothing says new tenant better than a freshly painted trailer.
It was so bizarre when you were saying
that is fucking funny and bizarre, and that sucks that you didn't get that money.
Yeah, we'd be good, though.
And same with us. That's shitty.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably have similar stories.
Yeah, sure.
You made me think when you, so on a happier note, when you said you guys bought a round,
yeah,
at the bar, I got into a renegotiation like a few seasons into Cash Cab,
okay,
and it was a battle.
All right,
it raged for a while,
okay,
and then I got a deal, and it was like
it all worked out.
We're going back in. We're going to shoot a whole bunch of episodes. Okay, we're have a show for a while. And I was all fired up, and I just went out and roamed around in New York for a little bit. Then I saw this little corner bar. I think there had been a comedy show. So there's a couple of people in there that I knew. And I just went in and I did what you did. I bought a round.
That's awesome.
I bought drinks for the whole place for a half hour. It was fucking packed, too. And I said, I want to buy a round for the whole house. And the bartender's like, what?
Yeah.
Like he turned and looked, man. I go, I want to get around for everybody. He goes, why?
Yeah. That's a good bartender.
And I go, I just want to do that.
Yeah.
I've had a really good day. I just want to buy around for everybody. And he goes, okay. And I said, and keep it open for a little while. Okay. And he goes over and he's writing some stuff down. He's got his glasses on the end of his nose now when he didn't before. I'm like, what's this guy doing? So he figures out sort of similar thing like you had. He says, here's how much it'll be for this amount of time. I said, fine, do it.
All right.
And he goes, he rings the bell and he shuts the music off. And he just hands me a microphone. I'm like, asshole.
You bought your time.
I didn't say I wanted to announce it to everybody. I was trying to be subtle. So I didn't, now I got the mic and everybody's looking at me.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't know what to say.
Who's this
and
guy?
I go, my name's Ben Bailey, and I just closed a new deal for Cash
Cab. There you go. All right.
And I'm buying everybody's drinks for the next half an hour.
And everybody's
place just goes, yeah! It was great. It was awesome. But I was so pissed that he put me on the spot to make an announcement.
The microphone. Where'd the microphone come from?
Dude, you didn't have that a minute ago.
Exactly.
I've never done that, like bought a whole round, or I've never had that done either. I've only seen it in movies or
in
TV
movies,
shows.
Yeah.
The Regans did, Brian and Dennis Regan did it on Nantucket about seven or 8 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was out with him.
Well,
the funny part, Brian kept doing it, and then when the check came, he looked at Dennis and goes, give me your credit card. And Dennis was like, I didn't agree to fucking any of this. You were the one doing all this. He's like, we're splitting it. Come on, I'll split it with you. And Dennis was like, you're the fucking famous one. You're more famous than me. And Brian Reese's like, shut the fuck up and give me a goddamn credit card. And so that was a pricey one for them.
They split it.
He did, yeah. But Dennis good-naturedly. But it was so funny because Brian just all along, we were my brother and we're just going to split it. And then Dennis was like, well, we are brothers. But you are a millionaire.
You have
more money
you
than
did
me.
This.
You know, right? And you were the one talking, not me. I was over here with Henley.
So, I did it one other time, but it was because it was like quartered beers or something
course,
for
yeah.
10
sure,
minutes.
It's easy, sure.
So you just buy it for the whole round, and everybody still cheers.
Ooh,
so it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
But it still feels fun.
No, it's great.
Like, yeah,
it's
we're having the best night
sure.
ever.
It's magic.
Bailey bought a round.
Cost $8 for the 10 of us.
That bookmaking thing is crazy. You know,
yeah.
It's like I can't.
I have other criminal stories. Not many, but that, the rest of them are just stupid.
One time when I was in like middle school, I had a criminal endeavor idea.
Ah.
I think how it happened is my bike got stolen. Everybody's into BMX bikes all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I was too. And I had to kind of build my own bike out of stuff because I couldn't afford to just buy a bike.
I had a lot of bikes like that.
So I built, you know, I bought kind of a shitty bike and then slowly put better stuff on it, made it into a pretty good bike. And then it got stolen.
Uh-huh.
And I went down to the police station to see if it was there and the bikes that had been found or whatever. And it was.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, there's my bike. So I claimed my bike. I had to go through a little thing where I filled out a form, said it was who I was and blah, blah, blah. And I, as I was leaving, I noticed that there's like a couple other really nice bikes
the police station
in the rack there. And if you walk by, you could keep an eye on the bikes that are in the rack. You know.
Okay.
So I start sort of staking out the rack, and I'm like, I think I could. I just go in there and
lift one,
claim one of those bikes. Tell them it's my bike, and I'm like, no, I was in there 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. So I like enlisted a little.
There you go.
A guy who's a year younger than me or something.
Protege.
Told him the grand idea. And he went in there to claim the bike. And he got it. He got the bike and he brought it out. And I was like, holy shit. We just kind of stole a bike from the police. And he took the bike home and we didn't know what we were going to do with it. We were going to keep it in his garage, and then maybe we're going to sell it or, like, sell the parts. Like, I never thought it would get to where we actually had the fucking bike. But so then that was kind of our plan. And so I went home, and it was already done. By the time I got home, by the time I walked across town, my parents were like, staring at me when I came in. I was like,
always a bad
thing.
Oh, parent.
Shit.
Always
they already know somehow.
Exactly. How did that happen?
It was so
I just left there. Oh, my God. Oh, that's
a terrible actor.
That's a walk.
He wrote down his name, but the wrong address or something. It's a small town. So they were suspicious of him. They followed him to me and watched us the whole way. Just called my parents. The whole thing came unraveled in like 2 seconds. I was grounded. I had to paint the fence. I always had to.
The
it
old
was
painting.
Really got in trouble.
Oh, God.
Criminal mastermind at age 11.
I took my brother to a massage parlor.
I like it already.
That was kind of...
That's against the law.
Yeah, that's against the law.
That counts.
He was 13, and then girls would come over. Pretty girls would come over, and they'd be like, they want to hang out with him and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But he was really into Lego. All he wanted to do
was play with
fucking Lego. So 13, 14, he's still playing with Lego. And girls would come over. My dad and I are like, you know, why don't you go do some homework with these girls? He's like, I'm just really into this Lego fort. You know, whatever. I'm just building this kind of Lego.
You guys are like, these girls are gorgeous.
Yeah, they're hot. Yeah. I'm like, shit, if I was crazy. So I guess he's about to turn. No, it goes on till he's about to turn 16. So my friend Ricardo, this guy's addicted to porn, right? He's just addicted to porn. And and this is like, you know, with VHS back in the day with all VHS. Right. So he,
oh, yeah.
But he would
a much tougher habit in those days.
He was so into it. And then he'd swear it off.
Easily.
Oh yeah,
you know he'd swear it off. And but he'd always talk to me about it. He had this thick ass. He's like, I go to the video store and they have that one room with the little saloon doors, and it's like the room is calling me. I want to kick open the doors and take the tapes, but I can't because I swear it off. It's calling me.
I swear it off.
I'm telling him about my brother. I'm like he's about to turn 16. He's a virgin, dude, and he's girl. So I'm like, I think he's shy. He's always playing with Lego. So Ricardo's like, he's like, there's this spa, but it's not a spa. And he's like, it was this place called Lily Spa. He's like, you bring him there, fucking Chinese chick. You give her $40. She beats your dick. And then, you know, believe me, he's never going to think about Lego again, right? So, so I'm like, all right, it's for his birthday. I'll do it. Like, to me, this is a good idea, right? You know, I'm thinking, you know, House of the Rising Sun, you know, all this shit. So I run it by him. I'm like, hey, for your birthday, I was thinking, man, you know, Ricardo told me about this massage place. This Chinese chick gives you a massage. And she, you know, she beats your dick. Whatever you, and he's like, all right, I'm really working on this Lego thing, but okay, all right, or whatever. So we drive out to this bus. I'll never forget this. We drive out, and it's like in a little strip mall, and it looks really legit, like a real, there's a Subway next to it. It's like, and it, you know, walk in, there's the music, there's the cat that waves, the fucking, the you know, Kitty. And there's the pressure point, the clock.
The Hello Kitty waves this way.
Heil Hitler. So this lady anti-Semitic cat. So lady comes out, the mama-san lady, and so she brings out like two girls, and she's like, you know, which one? So he picks out one of the girls, and I put a little extra. It was like just $60, make it really nice for my little brother's birthday, right? And I could see he's kind of like a little nervous or whatever. So he goes in there, and he's in there for like fucking half hour, 40 minutes, right? And I'm running out of shit to do in there because all these guys are coming in to get their dick beat, and I'm just sitting there like drinking tea, reading these Chinese magazines and shit. And
waving
just,
at the cat.
Yeah, right. Like, God damn, what's going on? And then finally, the chick he went in with comes out, and she's like, she walks out of the room. She's all red in the face. Her one arm is like really big. She's like, he take too long, more money. And she's talking really, I'm like, shh. She's like, he take too long, more money. This need more money. So I'm like, all right, just be cool. Right here, this is another $20 or whatever. It's just like, come on, this guy's fucking birthday. Whatever, can we not do that? So she's like, ah. She goes back in, right? He comes out. It must have been about 15 minutes later. He comes out, and Ricardo, we get in the car with Ricardo. Ricardo also went to get his dick beat during this time. You know, and he comes out, he's all relaxed. We're driving home. Ricardo's like, hey, you like it? And he's like, yeah, it was okay. Yeah, it's okay. And I'm like, dude, what do you mean? We got home. Like, what do you mean? Okay. He's like, yeah, it was cool. I'm just really thinking about this Lego, you know, situation.
Jesus.
I'm trying to, right? And we go to sleep. 2 weeks later, he calls me up. I'm out somewhere. He's like, listen, I got to tell you something. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm gay. Right? And I was like, oh. I was like, oh, dude. I thought I fucking drove him to it. I was like, dude, did I drive you to that? With? He's like, no, I've been gay for a long time. And I need you to help me tell Pop. You know? And I'm like, well, let's not tell him about the fucking, you know.
the massage
thing, man.
But, that poor girl.
That's how I found out my brother was gay.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I was so.
He loves you that much that he's about to go all the way to the end.
Yeah, man.
he's afraid to tell anybody. And then,
yeah, he was. Right. That got him out of it.
Sure,
he's like,
course.
This shit's not
somebody,
happening again.
Right.
It's
got to
be, you know, fucking Jackie Chan next time.
God.
Yeah, it was pretty bizarre. But that was my criminal. I don't know if that's even that criminal.
And then you guys, it doesn't matter.
It's a misdemeanor.
And then you guys told your dad? Or you
yeah, he
him?
Had to tell my dad was not having it. So I did like get his back because my dad was like, you know.
Your
it's
dad's
a phase.
So upset you got to take him to get jerked off?
Dad, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
I know you're really upset right now, Dad, but I've got the perfect place for you.
He too fat. He old you. Oh, shit. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was pretty crazy.
Wow, man.
But that's how I found out my brother was gay. That's I had incredible. No fucking idea. My wife was like, I knew all along, you know?
Yeah, she's like, how did you not know? You're like, well, he's my brother. So you're not thinking about along those lines.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, great stories, guys. That was a fun episode. We talked
awesome.
About a lot
we
of crazy
We can do more
stuff.
Crime. I haven't, you know.
More crime?
We can get back to it. I'm not saying now, but.
Oh,
know,
yeah, we
can
come back and do
I could, yeah, there's this is a long road.
I'm kind of proud and kind of ashamed to say that I have some more, too.
Hey, you've got to they're easy. Mine's, most of mine, my next one I'm thinking of is nowhere near as awful as that. We were just,
right.
we had a fake ID operation going on in high school.
I have a
victimless
similar
crime.
Very nice.
Yeah, is that
very
yeah,
nice.
Right.
I think we're beyond the statute of limitations.
I mean, yeah. All of these
right.
are.
I hope
why,
so,
yeah,
yeah,
I would hope so.
So, all right, I guess that's it for this episode of Tall But True. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. You can see where I'm going to be by going to therealbenbailey.com and clicking tour dates. If I'm near you, come and see me. I promise you will have a good time.
Yes.
Check out Blam, Badly Written Action Man, on the website. Check out Meet Me at Ray's. Those are both short films, both on the website. I'm Real Ben Bailey on all social media. Please follow me and say hello. DC Benny, you got something coming up?
Real DC Benny, you know, just Real DC Benny on Instagram and DCBenny.com. There's clips and stuff like that, and there'll be dates, so you can find out where I'm playing. Good shows. Yes. And Henley, what do you got?
Henley, you got something coming up?
I got at Vic Henley and at Vic Henley on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm at McGoobies. I'm like you. If you go to VicHenley.com, there's a way to click on the calendar and see what shows.
Oh, okay.
So if I'm somewhere near you, and if there's nothing on the calendar, it means I'm in New York City where I work 5 or 6 days a week.
Yes.
So just check your local club listings and come to the Comic Strip or the Comedy Cellar or Gotham or any of the other wonderful places that
treat us. Check your local listings.
Yes.
Right.
I love it.
Check, that's all I can say.
Where are you going to be?
McGoobies in North Baltimore. And it's June 8, 9, and 10.
Go check out Vic Henley in Baltimore, guys.
Should be fun.
McGoobies. And come see DC, Benny, and I at the Hollywood Improv on Friday, June 2nd at 8 p.m.
Yes.
All right, that's it for this episode. Come back for more Tall But True.